Thanks for listening to this podcast of The Exchange with Ed Stetzer. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes it possible. Thank you.
I graduated from nursing school in 1971, and it was just shortly after my graduation in 71 that Roe v. Wade was decided. And I have watched throughout my career the devastating things that happened to women and the babies as a result of Roe v. Wade.
Hi, and welcome to this week's edition of The Exchange with Ed Stetzer. My name is Micah Fries, and we're really glad to have you here. The Exchange is a place where we like to engage in true thoughts and theology, hoping to compel one another to love and good deeds. And we love having conversation with you about our topic, so be sure to jump on social media and use the hashtag The Exchange. Now, this week's show is particularly unique. Ed is going to have a conversation with Congressman Diane Black. She's a congressman from the 6th District here in Middle Tennessee. She serves on the very powerful House Ways and Means Committee. She's on the House Budget Committee, and she's also a consistent pro-life leader. Before we jump into that interview, though, let's hear from Pastor Matt Chandler about Christian civility.
Hi, Pastor Matt here from the Village Church in Dallas, Texas. When we're talking about theology, we're talking about what is of supreme importance. In fact, the way you think about God and what you believe about God will shape everything in your life. So one of the things that we can't do with theology is say that theology and doctrine does not matter, because it is the thing that does matter. In fact, it shapes and informs almost everything we do in our churches, to how we interact with people, to how we do baptisms, to whether or not we do altar calls. But what are we to do when we disagree? Like when people who love Jesus and want to see the kingdom of God seen, loved, and established disagree on secondary matters. How are we to disagree with one another? And is there a way to disagree in a way that's distinctively Christian? Well, I think there is, and unfortunately, the internet has created a venue in which, under the shadow of being anonymous, we say things because we feel safe in saying really foolish things, because we feel like nobody really knows who's saying that, and in the end, God knows. And so, really, I think the answer to Christian civility in an internet age is to talk about the relationship that we are to have with one another as Christians. We live in a society that's driven by contracts. And so whether your cell phone, your apartment, your home, your car note, we've signed these contracts, and the contracts basically say, I'm going to do this and you're going to do this in return. And yet, the relationship that we have with God and the relationship we have with one another is not contractual, but rather covenantal. And so the best way to understand this is, if you've been to a wedding ceremony, that moment where the bride and groom turn and face one another and begin to promise things to each other, that's never contractual language. It's always covenantal. It's not, I'm going to do these things if you do these things, but it's rather, I'm going to become this for you. The vows are covenantal vows. They sound like this, for better or for worse. It's not, if things are better, I'm staying, and they come back and go, well, if you're rich, I'm staying. No. It's for better or worse, I'm with you. In rich or in poor, in wealth or in poverty, I'm doing that with you. In sickness or in health, I'm doing that with you. Well, the basis of relationships between Christians is covenantal. We are brothers and sisters. We are in family together, and we must not disagree in a way that doesn't mirror this covenant relationship. And so this means we extend the benefit of the doubt. This means where we do disagree, we make sure we're dealing with content, and we're not creating caricatures and straw men and burning things down. We don't get personal. We don't attack one another. We can dissect ideas biblically, but even then, that must be done graciously and with great compassion. And so may we learn to walk in covenant love with one another, where we mirror well the unity we should have in Jesus Christ as we disagree upon secondary matters.
Do you think Christianity is irrelevant? Boring? Predictable? Think again. Here's author Jefferson Bethke.
What if Christianity isn't what you think? What if the God who made all things good, all this beautiful creation around us, is inviting us to a bigger and deeper story? When you look at Scripture, you see that it's this huge epic drama, this huge epic narrative, calling us to put our lives on the line for God and for Jesus. We're putting our story behind and following and coming under His reign, His rule, and His story. And so the question is, what if Christianity is less about going to heaven when you die and more about bringing that heaven down here onto earth? And that means our life matters, how we live it matters, and what story we're living matters. So when Jesus is saying, follow me into this bigger story, into this better story, will we say yes and will we follow?
Join Jefferson Bethke on a 6-week Bible study on finding your place in God's great story. It's entitled, It's Not What You Think. Learn more at lifeway.com/not what you think.
So congressman, first it's strange, you have to tell us why the congressman, but I want to talk a bit. We both have a concern around issues of life, but you come from a unique perspective. You're serving in Congress, mm-hmm. but you're a registered nurse who've kept up your licensure
Absolutely.
As a nurse. Tell us about why that matters. Why healthcare for you?
Well, healthcare is something I always wanted to do. My mother says that at the age of 4, I asked for a doctor's kit, not a nurse's kit, but a doctor's kit. And that's always been my love and my passion. And so I graduated from nursing school in 1971 in Maryland from a community college, Intermural Community College. And it was just shortly after my graduation in 71 that Roe v. Wade was decided. And I have watched throughout my career the devastating things that happened to women and the babies. Yeah. As a result of Roe v. Wade, and in particular, looking at an abortion industry of Planned Parenthood, 327,000 lives, babies are lost every year, and also the things that I saw in the hospital as a result of that, also the women that I've run into with the emotions that occur after an abortion. And so this has been a lifelong desire of mine to have the hearts and minds of people understand what really happens. You know, Planned Parenthood for years and the whole abortion industry have convinced women this was just a blob of tissue.
Yeah,
this is
right.
not a life.
Yeah.
And yet we as Christians know it is a life. Isaiah tells us that God knew us before he placed us in the womb.
Mm-hmm.
So we're believers. But beyond that, on a medical level, this is a life. And when you get a heart, a lung, a brain tissue, it is not a blob of tissue.
Right.
It's
That's
a
right.
baby.
Yeah.
And I think the only way that we really can change the hearts and minds of people is to have them understand, first of all, this is a life, but second of all the kind of tragedy and sadness that happens at the taking of a life.
It used to be that this was not a clearly partisan issue. We had people like Bob Casey in Pennsylvania, Tony Hall
That's
in Ohio,
right.
and others. But it seems now that this has become much more. I mean, I wrote an article expressing. I mean, I wasn't only mentioned. Cokie Roberts on NPR mm-hmm. mentioned mm-hmm. just how stunned she was to watch the DNC, Democratic National Convention. That I mean, at one point there were 24 times when people cheered when abortion, though euphemistically called choice, was mentioned, and what a shift it's been. So how do we speak into this issue, where it's not solely a partisan issue? But this should be an issue that Americans care about, that abortion. I mean, Democrats used to talk about being safe, legal, and rare. We don't even hear that
right,
anymore.
Right.
So talk. I mean, how do we change hearts and minds on this issue?
I think that these undercover videos have really raised the awareness of people saying, "Oh wow, I had no idea that it was that traumatic and that the horrendous things we saw in the video."
Yeah.
And of course, you know, one of the things that I have done as a result of this, talked about the illegality of what goes on in those cases, because in those videos we do see three big concerns of potentially illegal activity.
Yeah.
And look, taxpayer dollars are going to this organization. And we should care about taxpayer dollars
Right.
regardless of what the situation is. If this were happening in the banking industry where we thought dollars were being used illegally, we would be, or that there were operations that were illegal as a result of taxpayer dollars being given, we would say, let's slow down. Let's do something about this. Let's make sure that when taxpayer funding is funding anything, that it is done in a way that we can feel comfortable that the money is being used in the right way. And when there's potential illegal procedures that are occurring, we want to blow the whistle and say, let's investigate.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, no more money until we find out for sure about what's going on.
It seems to be hard, though, to do some of this. And again, I'm not thinking that there's this vast media conspiracy out there. But even people on the left noticed that when Susan B. Komen, when they tried to get out of the relationship with Planned Parenthood, that Planned Parenthood really, with allies in the media, went after Komen, and they eventually backed down, back and forth, back
That's
and
right.
forth. And even, I mean, all ombudsmen at major liberal publications just said, I mean, it was There was no one. There were no two sides here. There was one side, and it was Planned Parenthood's side. Mm-hmm. So if we have kind of this overwhelming mainstream media, and again, when I say that, I sound like a conspiracy theorist, and I'm not. But everyone saw this.
Yeah.
And now we see this, or in Gosnell, when we couldn't get coverage on these issues.
That's right.
How do we get the message across? Now, again, these videos have broken through, but then now there's a narrative about them. They're highly edited. They're not illegal. They're not selling. And I wrote an article in Christianity Today, and I called it selling. And everyone is not selling. I'm of the view that when you're negotiating prices, mm-hmm. and prices are negotiable, that's a sale.
That's right.
And am I wrong on that?
No, you're not wrong at all. Because if this were truly an industry that were up and up about this, and they weren't making money on this, then we would see that they'd have a fee schedule. Mm-hmm. And they could clearly say to you, here's how much it costs to harvest the tissue. Yep. These are babies.
Right.
I hate calling them tissue.
Right. But from their side.
It'd
be reimbursements.
For
yeah.
harvesting, here's how much it costs for the storage, the preparation, and also the transfer of the tissue. And we wouldn't be having a doctor who is a high-level doctor mm-hmm. in the organization saying, oh, by the way, why don't you tell me what you would pay, because I need a new Lamborghini.
Yeah.
Now, that's suspicious behavior.
Yeah.
And by the way, that is against the law to sell tissue for profit.
Yeah.
And so we saw last week what happened. Cecile Richards, who's the president of Planned Parenthood, then back down and said, oh, we're not going to take any more money.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to give the tissue, but we're not going to take any more money. Well, if they weren't doing anything wrong, why is it that they changed the policy?
Yeah, we weren't selling before, but now we're going to stop what wasn't selling.
That's right.
And I think it doesn't. I mean, this doesn't pass the reasonableness test. And I think even to the point where Hillary Clinton talked about it, I think she used the word disturbing. But still, everyone came back and doubled down on the issue as well. Now let's talk about some of the arguments that people have made around this issue. Highly edited videos.
Yes.
And we've had some testing, but tell us, is it highly edited? Are these accurate videos?
It is not. There is actually a forensic organization that's nonpartisan, has nothing to do with either side, that has looked at these videos, and the report is out there, can be read by the public and say, these are not highly edited.
Mm-hmm.
They are, anytime you turn off the camera and you turn it back on, that's considered editing.
Sure.
And they do recognize that during the time that they were paying their bill, let's say at the restaurant, that there was not filmed then. Or if someone got up to go to the restroom, they would have turned the camera off. That's the only editing that has occurred. And as a matter of fact, you can get on the internet, you can watch these in totality, and you can tell these are not edited. Mm.
I've watched them in totality. So, I think it's the civic duty of Americans
to
watch them in totality.
Absolutely.
I think it's the civic duty of people who want to call themselves pro-choice to watch them, mm-hmm. because I think we see some of the... Well, what happens? This is where it happens when we depersonify that child in the
That's
womb.
Right.
Other arguments, this is all part of a conspiracy to take down Planned Parenthood, who really only gives just a little bit of their business to abortion. Talk to us about that.
Yes. And Ms. Richards was before one of our committees, our oversight committee. I'm not on the committee, but I did have an opportunity to be there as a guest, and I did have the opportunity to ask some questions about that. She said several times during her interview, separate from my asking her a question, that doing preventative health care for women was their major mission. And she said we only have 3% of our mission are abortions. Well, if that's your major mission and 97% of what you do is preventative care, then why not suspend what you consider to be a minor part of your mission? And while these videos are being investigated, continue to give those services. But she didn't want to do that. As a matter of fact, she actually even admitted in the testimony when I asked her about health care and whether abortions are health care, she said, yes, elective abortions are health care.
It was also in that hearing. The question about mammograms came up. Mm-hmm. One of the particular things, all this preventative health care.
Yeah.
But Planned Parenthood doesn't do those things.
No, they do not. And she misrepresented herself. She said that they have never said that they did mammograms. As a matter of fact, we went back and pulled up footage where she testified at another time that if these services were not provided, women would not get their mammograms. And she testified as though they do mammograms. And she was called on that and came back out and corrected the record on that. But she once again talked about that in committee, that she's never said that. And they have claimed that in the past, but they got called on it and they had to back down. And I think that what this does for me is it says that the American people will be awakened by the moral, The legal aspects of what happens in the organization. And that's the only way that people will ever know, because there is a curtain there and the veil has been torn now, and people can actually see what goes on and that this is truly a life that is being taken.
In the face of so many critical social challenges, what are the loving biblical responses? Here's David Platt, author of Counterculture.
We're living in momentous days, a rapidly shifting moral landscape all around us, prevalent, pressing social issues on all sides, ranging from massive poverty in the world to orphans and widows to abortion to issues of religious liberty and racism and same-sex marriage and sexual morality. We as the church need to know how the gospel speaks to each one of these issues. That's the whole purpose of this book and this Bible study, is to equip and encourage the church to think through how does the gospel apply to all of these pressing social issues in our day, and how does God's word change the way we live in the middle of each of these issues in the culture around us.
Learn more at lifeway.com/counterculture.
I used to say all the time, there's a leadership problem in the church. There's a leadership problem in the church. After years of saying that, I came to realize I really don't think that's true.
I keep coming back to Ephesians chapter 4, verses 11 and 12, and it says that Christ gave us the apostles, prophets, evangelists, shepherds, teachers. Why? To equip. That word there, equip, is train, okay, to train. Why? So that the church can do the work and then be built up.
You see, throughout Scripture, what we find for the Christian is not so much that they're coming to church in order to watch others do ministry, but the reality is, in the Scripture, you see God has a holy calling on the life of every individual believer to be a missionary engaged in His purpose to redeem people from every tongue, every tribe, and every nation on this planet.
Yeah, Jesus took these men who didn't even know how to lead themselves. He took a group of men that were willing to follow Him, and He did leadership development with them. He discipled them to the point where they just didn't have intimacy with God. They had influence with others.
It's this holy cause ordained by God that we have to get. And I think as pastors and leaders, we have to understand it's not just up to us.
This equipping of these people will lead to the growth of the body, to the expansion of the church, to the accomplishing of God's mission throughout the nations.
I don't think there's a leadership problem in the church. I think there's a leadership development problem in the church.
Our guest today on The Exchange with Ed Stetzer is Congressman Diane Black.
Well, again, continuing our conversation, but why congressman? Explain to us why you're not congresswoman,
sure,
or person.
Sure. By the Constitution, there is a title. It's congressman, and I just go by the Constitution. Now, people will ask me that question, and sometimes women will even get upset with me that I'm not congresswoman. But I always point to a first year of a college. A young girl entering either high school or college, we call her a freshman, not a fresh woman. Because it's a title.
Okay.
She's a freshman,
that
and I'm a
sense.
Congressman.
And you are my congressman. But whenever I say you're my congressman, people correct me. And so now I can say, I've heard her explain to me. Okay, so congressman, we both share pro-life views, and as do a significant percentage of Americans, and a growing percentage of Americans. It's one of the few trends on cultural issues that are headed in the direction that probably you and I share.
Yes.
But talk to us a little bit about what's that pathway look like. Are we going to get anywhere with Planned Parenthood being seen as the organization it really is, and getting the government out of funding these operations? What's the pathway?
Well, I think that's a good question, and folks will even ask me, why are you continuing to do this? Because you know anything you put on the president's desk, he's going to veto.
Yeah.
And I said, I just dare him. I want it on his desk, and I want to dare him to veto something where he has not even called for an investigation.
Mm-hmm.
He should be calling for an investigation. Look, if they haven't done anything wrong, let them open up the doors. Let them say, here's our policies. We're only abiding by our policies. And let's show that they haven't done anything wrong. And that's one of the reasons why I continue to move forward on this is, one, I want to be sure that whatever's done with taxpayer dollars is used in an organization that's doing things legally. But the second is to win the hearts and minds of people.
Yeah.
Because they've been convinced over the years by the big abortion industry, this is not a baby.
Yeah.
And now we can show on these films it's clear.
Gosh.
And the kinds of horrendous things that are happening in those films where, and I don't mean to be graphic, but one of them they talk about decapitating.
Yeah, I think it's we need to be more honest and graphic.
We do need to be. And the nurse in there actually talks about decapitating because the brain tissue, we call it neural tissue, is very delicate and it's difficult to transfer. And so what they do is they decapitate the baby and put its head in a box and ship it. Now, when we think about this and we think about ISIS and what's happening in the Middle East and the kinds of horrendous activities that are happening there, we are appalled by it. We say, what barbaric activity. But we can take a baby and decapitate them and put their head in a box. And she even jokes, we'll close the eyes so that we don't upset the person that opens the box.
Mm.
You know, this is not America.
No.
This is not what we would expect. And until the American people actually get curious enough to go and watch these films, see it on their own, and understand what's happening, I'm not sure we can win the hearts and minds. But I think if we do have them see this, and we know this by polls that are done about people who have a certain opinion before seeing the films, and after seeing the films, their opinion has changed.
Yeah.
Even people who are pro-choice feel that it's not right.
I think that, again, civic duty. I think people need to watch this. People say, well, but the people who made it. I mean, we can't trust the people who made it. Here's what I would say. If this were something about animal cruelty with puppies, there would be 10 investigations going on from Congress
now.
That's right. There would be bills to change it. People would be in an uproar.
That's right.
But there is a lid on this kind of thing because we've bought into a reality that has been sold to us by an industry.
That's right.
And by a culture that is has a throwaway culture.
Rare and safe is what they told us.
Yeah.
These are not rare.
Mm-hmm.
We're losing 500,000 people, babies, 500,000 of our population, of those who would be productive citizens. And who knows, they may have been a great researcher that would have discovered something.
Sure.
We don't know what God had planned for that baby.
Yeah, and I think we share a concern for hurting people in difficult situations. So it's not a question of you know, there's not hurt all around here. The question is, what then is the solution? And so what, I mean, let's move forward. Let's say that that we can get Planned Parenthood defunded, which would be great news, I think, for a nation that values life and children. But what could we get to? I mean, since Roe v. Wade, I mean, we haven't really made a lot of substantive progress. Even late-term abortion. I mean, the U.S. is an outlier among, you know, people, progressives often say, look, we're one of the few countries that does this. We're one of the few countries that late-term abortions are actually legal as they are.
Absolutely.
And so how do we change this? How do we change hearts and ultimately laws? What would that look like?
I think that the American people, when they wake up, will want these laws changed when they actually understand and know. And I don't want to be Pollyannic about this, but I believe that we're getting there, as you have already referenced that.
The
young people. Mm-hmm. And a part of this, I'll go back to my years of medicine, a part of this is the fact that we have technology today where we can actually have a window into the womb, and we can see that there really is a baby there from very early on.
Yeah.
And when you can see that, that's really life. It changes the hearts and minds of people, and our young people have grown up with seeing that. They've not grown up with the same lie that we have. They are understanding more about medicine and technology and seeing that this is truly a life.
Mm-hmm. And the age of early viability continues to be pushed back. And yet, late-term abortion.
Yes.
So, I mean, we're fighting for life and taking life. And really, children of the same age in the womb.
Yeah. And babies are surviving at 21, 22 weeks now.
Stunning.
And we had a bill that went through the House and didn't make it through the Senate, the pain-capable bill.
Yeah.
There are only 7 other nations that allow these late-term abortions. Look, we're a nation better than that.
7 other nations like North Korea. I mean, these are not nations that we want to be affiliated
with. That's right. They're not ones that you would have on your travel list to say, I want to go and have a vacation.
Exactly.
We value life more than that here in this country. And I think, again, the hearts and minds of people need to be won, because they will push the legislation to say we're no longer going to allow late-term abortions because we know this is a baby. Mm. And they are pain capable.
Yeah.
We know science is showing us more and more every day about what they're capable of feeling in the womb. And we know that they're pain capable at 20 weeks, and we should not be taking the life.
And yet it appears that, I mean, Roe v. Wade was a Supreme Court ruling. Mm-hmm. Now there's legislative action that sometimes gets pushed back by the courts, sometimes is accepted by the courts. So, I mean, is it a political solution to get to a place where a Supreme Court is more friendly towards the protection of life? Because you know, the pro-life view is not winning a lot of elections right now and having justices that are strong advocates of this. So I mean, is that ultimately where we're headed? Is we have to have a showdown in the Supreme Court? Because the Senate, I mean, if there's a Republican next, the Senate is, I mean, are we going to get any candidates who are pro-life through anyway?
I think you will. I mean, we have a whole conference full of pro-life folks, and we also have a couple of Democrats who stay with us on these issues. A number of these Democrats were the Blue Dog Democrats, and they've been defeated, and I miss them. I wish we had them back, because it makes a much stronger case when you can say this is a bipartisan issue and that we're going to lock arms together and we're going to move forward. I don't know about the Supreme Court. I've been so disappointed in their decisions that they've made over the last couple of years. I think our founding fathers are turning over in their grave to know that the Supreme Court, nine justices in black robes, have been able to make such decisions that are not even provided for in the Constitution. They're just making them up as they go along. So I'm very concerned about the Supreme Court. But it's another reason why we have to have a president who understands values of putting people in the Supreme Court that are going to make judgments and opinions on the law, interpreting the law and not making the law. And that's where we are right now.
Elections have consequences.
They do.
We certainly end up the place. And can you get through a candidate? Will they be borked?
Yes.
And will the Senate actually get to the nuclear option where they'll say, there's nothing left to lose, so we're going to go with 51 votes rather than the full 60. I don't know. It's a tricky time.
We're calling upon the Senate to change their rules.
Yeah.
This is antiquated.
Yeah.
It was put into place well over 100 years ago. And anybody who says a majority is 60, when you have 100, a majority would be 51.
Yeah.
And that's
math
what
is
we
hard,
need.
Though.
We need to do that. And when you operate out of fear and say, well, if you change it, then when we are in the minority, then we won't be able to have any power. Well, I don't operate out of fear. Operate out of strength.
Yeah.
And change this, and let's get some things done.
You've been on this issue, the pro-life issue, for decades.
Decades.
Are you encouraged, discouraged, weary, emboldened? Where are you?
I am encouraged.
Tell me why.
I am encouraged to know, as I talk to young people, and I'm out there in schools and different town hall meetings and things of that sort, and we're seeing the young people have more value for life. And I'm encouraged by that. They are our future, and they will be the ones who will push. They'll push legislation and they'll push the policy changes that I think are needed in order for us to show that we're a nation that values life.
For resources mentioned in today's show, be sure to visit edstetzer.com. And while you're there, you can check out some of our archived episodes. Thanks so much for joining us and have a great week.
Thanks for joining Ed Stetzer and his team for this week's radio edition of The Exchange. Hear this and other past broadcasts of The Exchange, read up on the latest trends from Lifeway Research, and insights and articles from Ed and his team by visiting edstetzer.com. The Exchange is presented by Lifeway Christian Resources in cooperation with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media. Thanks for listening to the Exchange Radio Podcast. Programming like this is made available through your support. Find out more at myfaithradio.com.